Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thung Earthlitz, well, it's almost here. You can almost taste it in the air. 1999 issues, running since 1977. Prog 2000 of 2000 AD is imminent. We have just 1 week to go until this unprecedented milestone in British comics arrives. And, you can feel the buzz of Thrill Power from the 2000 AD Nerve Centre as we get ready, not only to publish this landmark issue, but also, let's not forget, all the events around the globe that are taking place to celebrate it on the 1st of October. So on this latest edition of the 2000 AD podcast, we speak to some of the droids involved in this wonderful, wonderful issue. It's oversized, 48 pages, available from all good news agents and comic book stores, as well as digitally from 2000 AD's web shop and apps. So we're going to be talking to Brian Bolland, Kev O'Neill, Peter Milligan, Gordon Rennie, and we're going to be discussing with them what it's like to have input into this amazing, amazing issue. I'm almost overcome with excitement about Prog 2000, as I barely get any sleep. But before we crack on with the Prog 2000 chat, just a reminder that this week we have two of our fine publications out on shelves at newsagents and comic book stores. Prog 1999 with a rather fetching Boo Cook cover, and Joe Strain magazine number 376. Prog 1999, absolutely fantastic. You should definitely get it. However, Prog 376 includes something very, very special, and it's right there on the cover. Harry Heston is a character created by Stuart Perkins and Jake Lynch for their 1990s Judge Dredd fanzine Class of 79, makes his official debut in the Judge Dredd magazine. Now, this is a particularly poignant occasion because, sadly, Stuart died earlier this year. You may have seen the article that ran in the local press and has been on our social media about the fact that he was very excited to see his co-creation appearing in the pages of the magazine. Unfortunately, he never got to see it, but it's great to be able to run this strip written by Arthur Wyatt and drawn by Jake Lynch as a tribute to Stuart and his love of 2000 AD and Judge Dredd. So make sure you grab a copy. Tons of other good stuff in there, including the conclusion to Lawless, which we talked about a number of weeks ago. But definitely one to grab when you can. So let's just talk events. 2000 AD this weekend is at the London International Tattoo Convention at Tobacco Dock in London. If you're able to come along, please do. It's something a little bit different to your normal comic book convention, but we're going to be there with a whole host of artists. 2000 AD artwork exhibition and, usual serving of extreme thrill power, including a rather spooky, deadly guest at our booth. So do check out the lineup for that if you're into your tattoo art, or whether you're not. It promises to be an absolutely fantastic weekend. But one weekend after that, we have the 2000 AD Prog 2000 mega signing super global signing event, which is taking place across the world with events in London, Eastbourne, Cardiff, Shrewsbury, Edinburgh, Manchester, Dublin, LA, and Sydney in Australia. 32 droids all taking part in this mega signing event, where you'll be able to get copies of 2000 AD signed by some of the people who make it. Please do go along and support these signings. From Forbidden Planet in London. Scorch Comics in Eastbourne are doing a fantastic screening of Dread afterwards. It's also going to be great to see Chris Burnham at Meltdown Comics in LA, and Mark Sexton, who is over at King's Comics in Sydney. So this is a truly global event, and it can't happen without your support, Earthlit. So make sure you get along to your nearest signing and celebrate Prog 2000 of 2000 AD. Speaking of which, let's crack on with the interviews. Now, although he's been on the cover a few times over the last few years, he's not been within our pages for quite some time. In fact, Simon Matt reckoned the last time he appeared in 2000 AD was 1987. So it's absolutely wonderful that Brian Bolland, one of the absolute titans of early 2000 AD, is back within our pages with a one-page sequential strip as part of Prog 2000, and it's wonderful to welcome him to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Welcome, Brian.
Well, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So we are coming up to 2000 AD's 2000th issue, and it's special in a lot of ways, but one of those ways is the fact that you've not only returned to 2000 AD, but we have a page of your sequentials, which I think is the first time in 20 odd years.
Well, it's a very rare thing for anybody. I don't really do any of these days for anybody.
Right. I mean, what made you decide to change that?
Well, an occasion, really, isn't it? I mean, it was only one page, and I spent a very long time doing it, because I work on a computer, I work in Photoshop, and I'm very meticulous these days, and I spent a very long time doing my covers, but it was, an opportunity not to be missed, really, wasn't it?
And, I mean, was it strange, you say you don't do sequentials very often, was it strange to come back to that process?
I'm a little out of practice at it, and you never know quite what you're going to get with covers. I get to decide what to put on the cover, pretty much.
Sure.
But with this, you're at the mercy of the writer. And if he wants a crowd scene on every panel, which was the case in this particular page, then you've got to get on with it.
Yeah. And in terms of, you say it's an occasion. What does it mean to you for 2000 AD to have reached this milestone?
Well, it's a great thing, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I think 2000 AD is one of the longest-running sort of adventure or action comics that we've had in this country. And I think Judge Dredd has got to have outlived Dan Dare as an action character, hasn't he?
Yes. In terms of, how many issues have been printed. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And is it 40 years now, is it?
It will be 40 years in February.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, when you were working on Judge Dredd back in the 70s and 80s,
yep.
did you have any idea that the character would have this kind of longevity?
Not at all. I mean, if you remember, I was working on 2000 AD when Judge Dredd didn't make it to the cover. At the beginning, I don't think we realised what a great character, what a long-lasting character he was going to be. We had those strange covers where the artist was asked to just invent something, and then there'd be a little bit of text written to go with it. And Judge Dredd stories were somewhere in the back. But I think the first Judge Dredd cover I ever drew was the one with the Jolly Green Giant on the front.
All right.
Which was suppressed.
Absolutely.
Very soon afterwards.
Yeah. Well, of course,
it has reappeared.
It has just been reprinted in the Cursed Earth Uncensored.
Although, should I say, he was a giant who happened to be green, wearing a lot of leaves.
And any similarity to characters living or dead is purely coincidental.
Well, quite. Yeah. I think that was just coincidental, I think.
And when Matt Smith, our editor, first contacted you with the idea for these kind of interstitial pages that go through Prog 2000, what was your first reaction to it?
I thought my reaction was that I don't want not to be in this issue.
Right. Oh, good.
Really. I had no reason to say no, and so I was happy to do it.
And what does 2000 AD mean to you, not just in context of your career, but also in personally?
Well, I'm hugely fond of it. I mean, my career, whatever shape it's taken over the years. It's really down to the popularity of Judge Dredd, really, and 2000 AD. I think I've been so fortunate that I just happened to be drawing a very popular character. And then I was able to, I'm afraid, I was able to flee the coop and go and work for other people because, thanks to 2008, a lot of the artists and writers became known worldwide. So I've got, and in a way, I don't know whether I should plug this, but I think I'm real thankful for Star Wars because the film, because in 1977, somebody at IPC must have said, there's going to be a popular science fiction film coming out soon. Maybe we should put out a science fiction comic.
Absolutely. It was Kelvin Gosnell who wrote the original memo to say we should capitalise on this.
Because prior to that, science fiction was not a genre that was selling in comics, was it? It was all football comics, all war comics, all anything but science fiction. But I think they gave it a go and it turned out to be a success.
And as time has gone on, and obviously, like you said, you flew the coop and went off to America.
I stayed here, in fact. My heart belonged to 2000 AD.
Oh, good. I mean, that was really what my next question was going to be, was just how important it is to you.
Well, I've
personally
worked a lot in the superhero genre in America, but I was never really fully a superhero artist. I like the quirkiness and alternativeness of Judge Dredd. I mean, Judge Dredd isn't a superhero, is he?
No.
Far from it. The mixture of humour and satire and horror, really, that you get in Judge Dredd was a recipe that I wasn't really able to stray very far from. Mm. I could never really do straight superhero work very well. I also thought that, you know, I can come back to Judge Dredd any time because I just feel I know him and I know that kind of mix of elements.
I mean, it's one of the things that our fans is always asking for is, you know, when are you going to get McMahon back? When are you going to get Bolland back? Mentioned before at convention panels how you've in the past asked Matt for a Dredd script, but it's just never kind of come together.
No, I did ask for one once, and one was written. John Wagner wrote one. I asked for it to be about the League of Fatties, because I like the League of Fatties. But I was very busy at the time and with the American work, and I just couldn't fit it in. And I knew I was just letting people down by having this script. And eventually Matt said, look, since we've got this script, can we get someone else to do it? So I'm afraid I passed on that one. But I don't know. I'm not doing much work at the moment. I'm doing a kind of autobiographical kind of memoir in pictures, which I do in my spare time, which I seem to have a lot of at the moment. So maybe I'll do a story.
Well,
that
would be pretty amazing, if I'm honest with you. And you know, we've come up to the 2000th issue now. You've only been able to do one page for us in this issue, but it clearly means a lot to you to be present with Mick and Kev and all those guys as part of it. And I mean, you did a signing a couple of months ago at Gosh Comics in London with Mick.
My old mate Mick.
Were you, because I've seen photos of the signings back in the early 80s where it's you know, the full lineup, including, you know, people like Ron Smith and John Wagner. Were you surprised
Ian
that Ian Gibson, of course, Alan Moore. Were you?
Have you seen those? The ones with Alan Moore? I don't know if you have.
Yes. I've seen a couple. Were you surprised at the level of interest that's still there for your work on 2008?
Well, it is a bit surreal when you find yourself 40 years later doing something very similar, sitting with Mick and signing various things. But, you know, I mean, I've been involved in the convention scene, so you just get used to people lining up and wanting your autograph and telling you how wonderful you are. Yes. I mean, all the artists get that. So you do it's always nice, and especially when you meet somebody who's middle-aged, and they show you a photograph of themselves when they're 16, getting an autograph from the Forbidden Planet.
I imagine it is quite surreal, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, it's surreal being able to look back that far, really.
We're hopefully going to hear more from Brian in the future on the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Now, looking backwards to looking forwards, Counterfeit Girl is a series that's beginning in Prog 2000. Our editor Matt Smith has been very keen to represent both past, present, and future of the galaxy's greatest, and that is by the creative team of Peter Milligan and Rufus Dayglow. And it's wonderful to welcome Peter Milligan onto the 2080 podcast to speak about Counterfeit Girl. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, mate. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. So, Counterfeit Girl, let's talk a little bit about that. Do you want to give our listeners a quick rundown of what the strip's about?
Yeah, first of all, I wanted to try to, you talked about the comic stories that hark back to the fantastic stories that happened in 2000 AD. Mm. I wanted to create a character with that kind of gravitas or that kind of depth. In the front of a character, you kind of see her, and because of what she does, she kind of feels as though she might have been around for a while, or might be around for a bit longer. The main character is called Counterfeit Girl. And the theme of the story is identity theft, more specifically, identity theft in the future. I've been kind of like, obviously, we all get lots of warnings about identity theft, and perhaps we've all been victims of identity theft of one kind or another. And so I started to think about this and thought about how it might develop into the future, and ad nauseum. I come up with this story set in this kind of Blade Runner-ish kind of world, but slightly weirder than that. And our main character is a young woman whose name might be Libra, because you're never quite sure, because she's a Canterbury girl. And she is an identity theft extraordinaire. And we see how in the future how she goes about doing this this fairly nefarious kind of business, and the risks that involve of buying cheap identities,
okay,
personas. I started to think, what does it mean? What does an identity theft mean? If you took it beyond just a credit card number or a bank number, if you took it to the other step, an identity theft, to steal someone's identity, to steal someone's persona, and these questions are the kind of questions that keep me up at night. And so I thought about it, and this story kind of developed where I could explore these fairly nutty kind of themes. But I think what's developed is this really exciting future story about this character who's kind of an anti-hero, but we kind of get to like, because she may be bad. She may be an identity theft, but there are a lot more bad people in this comic book who are after her.
Right, right. So... Matt Smith, our editor, has said that Prog 2000 is meant to represent not just the previous phases of 2000 AD. So you've got Dread, you've got Sinister Dexter, you've got Nemesis, characters like that, but also the future. And Counterfeit Girl represents the future. Why did you?
It's just nice to hear.
Oh, right. Why did you decide to pitch Counterfeit Girl to 2000 AD? Why do you think it's the perfect home for it?
Well, I mean, sometimes I'm not sure, but I'll think about that. it just really feels like the right kind of home for it. Mm. There are some stories that just think that it's 2000 AD. I think partly because the readership understands this kind of world quite easily. So I think that quite quickly you can explain the world, and you can set up the world, and you can get on with the story, you can get on with the character. Mm. And I think that the readership of 2000 AD, because of all the stuff they've read, because of the stuff they expect from the comic book, they have a certain level of, if you like, sophistication, if you want to put it, and they just get this kind of stuff so that you can kind of get on with the story and get on with the character.
And you're working with Rufus Dayglow on the strip, and you worked with him just recently on Bad Company First Casualties. What does Rufus bring to Counterfeit Girl?
Well, I mean, first off, I thought his work on Bad Company was fantastic. I just think that it's kind of like it really, without Rufus, the comic wouldn't have happened because it needed someone of that level and also that kind of interest in the comic to do it. And we got on really well whilst doing that, and we kind of hit it off, I think, creatively. And look, when I created a Counterfeit Girl, I wasn't creating it with Rufus, but once I had created it, we showed it to Rufus, and he came up with some really good ideas, as he always does. Rufus, as well as being like a really top artist, with all that punk, a post punk sensibility and all that stuff, he's got all that, but he's also very smart, and he chips in with some interesting ideas and interesting visual ideas and locations, So he was just really brought some interesting stuff to this. To this comic, he brought some interesting stuff to the world building of the comic, to the some locations where, because of his very peripatetic childhood, he'd lived in certain interesting places, and we drew on some of those experiences for the look of the comic book.
And one of the things I was just talking to Brian Bolland about was what it was like to be coming back to 2000 AD when it had been such an important part of his early career. Just recently, we've seen a lot of you. We had you in with Bad Company, and now we've got Counterfeit Girl. What attracted you back to 2000 AD, and what is it like being back here?
Well, the thing that attracted me back originally was Bad Company, because of a number of reasons. What was happening to Brett. And I always said that at a lot of signings, a lot of people come up with Bad Company books. And really amazing, like particularly in this country, but not exclusively in this country. And I was always amazed at just how interested and how kind of really into really this comic book, Bad Company. After all these years, people were still really into it. And I always told myself, when I had a story that I really wanted to write, I would do one. But I wouldn't do it just for the sake of it, because I think that's the worst thing you could possibly do. When a comic book has meant something to someone, to so many people, I think that you've got to kind of be true to it. And I always said that I wouldn't write another Bad Company unless I had a story to tell, and I did have a story to tell. More importantly, we had an artist who could draw the story. Brett was, God bless his soul, he was in no condition then to draw it. So we needed, Rufus then came along and realized how much Rufus loved war stories and Bad Company. And so that was really worked out well. And when I came back to 2000 AD and working with Bad Company, I just like enjoyed the atmosphere again. I enjoyed being there. I enjoyed the kind of the six part story. It was a change from what I normally do and what I have been doing. And it was just a complete change. And I thought, this is quite interesting. There are some stories that would fit Bad Company, would fit 2000 AD more than they would fit anywhere else. And I think Counterfeit Girl, it could obviously go somewhere else, but it just seemed such a good fit for 2000 AD that after Bad Company, I thought, well, if I have another idea and I think it's good for 2000 AD, I'll show it to Matt to see whether it disgusts him or whether he likes it. And unfortunately, it fell somewhere in the middle of those two. I think he liked it, and he did like it, and we talked about it, and it just developed, and I think it's great.
What's it like for you seeing 2000 AD get to 2000 issues? I mean, it's a hell of a milestone, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of past its midlife crisis, isn't it? I think that was a few years ago. I don't know what comes after a midlife crisis.
I think second childhood.
Second childhood, yeah. I think it's in the... Well, I think a lot of the readers that come along, they're certainly in the second childhood, I can tell you. because these kind of like people of an age where they should know better come along with big cases full of 2000 ADs. I think it's fantastic. as long as they're there, we're here, I think it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah. And you said that Counterfeit Girl, you feel like you wanted it to feel like a character that's either been around for a long time or has a future. I mean, have you got?
Yeah, when you saw Judge Dredd, or when you saw I don't know, Strontium Dog, or you saw some of these other characters, you thought, this looks like a character that's part of the 2000 AD stable.
Mm.
I quite liked the idea of creating a character that was very different from all that, very different, because she's not macho, and she doesn't carry guns, and she's very different from the usual kind of 2000 AD character. I guess a bit closer to Halo Jones than Judge Dredd or Strontium Dog, but not really like Halo Jones. So a bit more, but more in that ilk, you know. So I guess I wanted to create something that felt like, oh, this feels like a 2000 AD character.
Thanks very much to Peter for chatting about Counterfeit Girl. Now, from looking forward to looking back a little bit, and one of our most popular characters, Rogue Trooper, will be returning to 2000 AD Prog 2000 with a story called Ghosts of New Earth by Gordon Rennie and Richard Elson. And returning to the 2000 AD podcast is writer Gordon Rennie to chat about bringing Rogue back to 2000 AD. Welcome, Gordon.
Well, hey, mate, thanks.
No worries. So, Rogue Trooper, I mean, this is a universe that you are used to playing in, because you've got Jaeger, which you're writing at the moment, and you had the 86ers a while back, and you have done Rogue Trooper stories in the past. What is it about the character that attracts you so much?
I think it's the environment rather than the character. As we'll soon talk, my ambition is always to write Rogue Trooper with as little Rogue Trooper as possible in it. So it's the environment of New Earth, just this endless war that I always like, and the mad technology and just the completely messed up mess they made of this planet. That's what I like.
Mm. Oh, for Prog 2000, do you want to give us an idea of what aspect of Rogue and his world we're visiting with this episode?
Well, the story's called Ghosts of New Earth, and it's about sort of New Earth urban myths. The idea was that the war's been going on so long now, it's acquired its own mythology and folklore, you know, ghost stories about the war, about some of the things that happen in it, and that Rogue has become one of those ghost stories, and so is another character who's also featured in the story, which I won't... Spoilers, won't go into here. They're the ghosts of New Earth.
Right. Was it something that Matt Smith approached you to do for Prog 2000?
Well, I don't know about Matt. Tharg approached me.
Terribly sorry.
And I said, after the usual Borag Thung stuff, I said to him, is it a retrofest or can I do something different? And he said he'd like something different. So that's what I tried to do.
Okay.
So I was trying to do something different.
Is there a often an issue with characters that have been around for a long time, like Rogue Trooper, have a lot of backstory, various different attempts to change the character and reboot it, that that you become beholden to that past?
There is that issue, but I try not to be beholden to no man or nothing. I quite happily break the rules and circumvent what I can. That's what I've done here again. It's still recognisably Rogue, but a slightly different look at his world, hopefully.
Okay. And, I mean, obviously this is in Prog 2000, and one thing that we've already spoken to Brian and to Peter about is what a milestone this is, what a landmark issue. As someone who's been writing for us for many years, what are your feelings about 2000 AD reaching this point?
It's great it's there. I mean, I don't really dwell on landmarks and things like that, to be honest. You know, I'm just glad to have been part of it. I mean, along for the ride, and as reader and now as creator. And yeah, 2000 issues, good Lord, who'd have thought it?
with this story, you're working with Richard Elson. Have you had any contact with him? Have you seen any of the visuals?
No, I have not seen a page of it so far.
Okay. It'll be a surprise to us all then.
In a few days' time, you know, when it hits my doorstep.
But you've worked with numerous artists on Rogue Trooper and Rogue Trooper World stories. Who's been your favourite?
Oh, dear me. What a question to ask. Simon Colby on Jaeger is my favourite.
Are there any particular qualities why that is? Because it's very kind of visceral and nasty kind of artwork, isn't it?
Yeah, Simon gives good nort, you know, and it's got a horrible grungy look to it, especially with Len O'Grady's colouring. I think it really, really nails what that world, that whole universe is about, that the look they've got.
Yeah, yeah. And you've also got a new series coming up soon called Hunted. Do you want to give us a little taster of what that's going to be about?
It's back to New Earth again.
Yay. And
It's about the Chaser General. I'll just get, you know, spoilers out the window here. It spins off slightly from Ghosts of New Earth, although the two stories aren't necessarily connected. I just like writing the bad guys. You know, I wanted to do for him what I've done for Nortz and Jaeger, is slightly humanize him. Although he's absolutely horrible, though. He's still got no redeeming features, but I tried to give him what he never had before, which is a personality and a motivation and a past.
Why do you think a character like Rogue Trooper is not just ripe for, you know, retellings and exploring the world, but why do you think he's so popular?
Because people like war stories, you know, they're always around. I think it's that simple. I think there's plenty in Rogue. It's interesting, the idea of a soldier created for war, but it's never really been that well investigated, I feel, in the scripts. You know, is he human? Is he not human? What's his psychology? We never really find out what goes on in his head.
And then, of course, you've got the biochips, which of course are meant to be his soul in many ways.
They're a great idea. I'm not sure they've ever. It's the stupid names and the talking hat that always gets me. It's always back to the talking hat with me. I try to do it as make it as credible as I can, but.
we're looking forward to seeing more Rogue Trooper in Prog 2000 and also to reading Hunted. So yeah, thanks very much for chatting, Gordon. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing what you deliver from the battlefields of New Earth.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
So Rogue Trooper isn't the only old-school character that's turning to the pages of 2000 AD for Prog 2000. Nemesis the Warlock, who's one of the most popular characters we've ever published, is making a return. Pat and Kev came to us in 1999 with supposedly the last chapter in Nemesis's story, ably helped by the excellent Henry Flint. But for this very special issue, they have reunited for one last bite at Nemesis's story. And to be quite frank, it is absolutely mind-blowing stuff. So it's absolutely wonderful to welcome Mr. Kev O'Neill, one of the titans of 2000 AD, to the podcast. Welcome, Kevin.
Very nice to meet you, Michael. It's my pleasure.
Good, good. So let's talk about Nemesis the Warlock. What's it like being back?
Well, it's like it was yesterday. But I think the last one I did, which was actually the final episode ever, was got to be a decade ago or more. And the kind of we set for ourselves was really because we'd done an ultimate final episode, instead of doing a flashback or something like that, to actually continue on from the final episode, which was quite interesting. So it does begin kind of a billion years later, which was great fun, and it's terrific characters. I feel very comfortable drawing them again, because I've never not enjoyed drawing the Blitzspear or Torquemada or Nemesis.
Let's talk a little bit about what Nemesis means to you and your career. I mean, what can you remember some of the genesis of the character?
Well, it began in a kind of almost unlikely way as a spin-off from Robusters. We did a Robusters episode, which was a tube chase, and the kind of boss of bosses at the time told me if a strip hadn't been running so late, he would have blue-penciled the whole chase sequence, because he hated it. So I told this to Pat, and it made us both angry. So we suggested to Steve McManus that we do the Terror Tube. And that kind of grew. It was popular. We did a sequel, and then it only introduced really the Blitzspear and Torquemada. The Nemesis character was kind of unseen. So we did a summer special story, and we developed it further. And in those days, you could just ring up and say, well, we'd like to do a series spinning off these characters. And it just happened, you know, just went ahead and did it. We were trusted enough to do it. I got the impression that there were certain people at IPC who just didn't like it. They knew it was smuggling in elements that they were uncomfortable with. They couldn't exactly pinpoint what it was. I think had they known we were a couple of lapsed Catholics, a lot of that past history was being poured onto the pages. It probably would not have been public, because IPC was extremely conservative.
Mm.
So 2000 AD was, we were always bristling because we were being thwarted all the time with what we could or could not show. Nowhere near as brave to do as it is today. But that was, in a way, that was part of the fun. It was a kind of game, a game with management, you know. To sneak in stuff, half your heads off, because that had got by, and they were seeing other things which are completely innocent, and I was changing them, and ludicrous alterations. It's always a huge fun, and that kind of really came back to me when the option to do this six pager came up. Plus, it is Proc 2000. I think if it was Proc 3000, you'd need a Ouija board to contact me, frankly.
I mean, when the idea was first mooted about just, you know, one more Nemesis the Warlock story, was it an immediate yes?
Instant. It was instant. Pat told me, I think Matt said five pages, and all I said was, can it be six? The kind of classic Nemesis story length. Mm. But there was no question of, it'd be a lot of fun. I know it's sometimes to be cautious return to popular characters, not to sort of fumble the ball, so to speak. But mm-hmm. As I say, we started with some problems at the beginning, which made it kind of interesting. And once I started drawing them again, it was kind of, like I say, like yesterday. They're very enjoyable to draw, because we put the time in the past. But I would have stopped drawing it if it hadn't been back in those days, really so poorly paid I couldn't make a living drawing it. That's the awful truth of it, you know.
I find it incredible that even with the kind of conflict you describe between creators and management, you've got so much through with Nemesis. I mean, it's absolutely dripping with, you know, very overt political satire. There's a lot of quite rude imagery in there as well.
I agree. In a way, it was so over the top. It was getting stuffed by in plain sight. Mm. It wasn't. It didn't look like something that would have appeared in any of the other publications. And by that point, 2000 AD was, was kind of strutting its stuff. You know, it was making quite an impression, and Americans had begun to notice it because of stuff was being reprinted out there. So it was just an interesting time. Like I say, it was an archly conservative company, IPC. And there was a small amount of joy in getting stuff passed from, you know, that was, it was schoolboyish, but fun.
And, you, there's a lot of water under the bridge from the last time, even we saw, Nemesis in 2000 AD, but I get the feeling that as soon as you started drawing him again, it was like a duck to water, you know, all the old kind of, I don't know, artistic reflexes kind of kicked in.
What was really handy this time, the last time I drew Nemesis, I'd really only just begun The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which of course is from black and white for colour. But this time, when I drew Nemesis, I'd been working on Cinema Purgatorio with Alan Moore for a year or more, which is, you know, purely black and white strip. Mm. And so doing Nemesis in black and white was even more fun this time. I had a better sort of handle on it, really. And I actually do genuinely love black and white comic strip. I think it's a great format.
Mm-hmm. We've already touched on this, but you know, 2,000 issues. I mean, did you have any idea when you were doing Nemesis originally that you know, you were involved in these conflicts with editorial? You and Pat were kind of, you know, pushing back as much as you could. Did you have any idea that it would have this kind of longevity to it?
Well, I've said this before, but as far back as when I was Janet Shepherd's art assistant on staff at 2008. When we were putting together the first issue, which on Christmas Eve, 76, and we were pasting limbs back onto bodies and painting and whiting out pools of blood and stuff like that, pulling down flesh, I did think this is a fantastic comic. It'd be lucky to last 6 months because the scrutiny it's coming under. This is Prog 1, you know. So no, by the time we were, there was always a threat. There was always a slight management threat of ever going to either merge us into Star-Lord, which was a rumour, or just merge the comic, or close it down. Uh-huh. There's a constant kind of, that was always in back time, you know, just going to close it down. So I think it's astonishing, absolutely astonishing, it's lasted 2,000 issues with that kind of background at IPC. I think it's just that there's been more open publishers since then, and it's because it's kind of last man standing of that whole era of British comics.
Yeah.
People have genuine affection for it. I'm always amazed at the affection people have for 2000 AD. You know, they haven't forgotten it. It creates some very fond memories of when they were growing up. So just the sight of an old cover or something can kind of create this nice warm feeling. It's terrific. It's really terrific. And it's kind of, in terms of longevity, it's probably had a longer run than the original Eagle, or things which are kind of respected in a more middle class way, shall we say. Comics are slightly more good for you, more educational.
Well, Nemesis the Warlock certainly did me an awful lot of good when I was younger, I have to say.
Well, I'm pleased to say it's had a corrosive effect wherever it's
and in terms of this final one-off story, you know, let's say it's a billion years in the future. I've seen the final panel as well, which is quite possibly the most Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill thing I think I've ever seen. it just seems like there was a lot of. Was there a return to that kind of almost schoolboyish glee of pushing the envelope as far as you could?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's those 6 pages is a very, very tight discipline nowadays. It's if you work in American comics, you wish had much longer form, and some stories go off even years. Mm. You know, but a classic kind of 6-page hit and run to this big story. I mean, you could probably read the one we've done, even if you haven't seen Nemesis before, and kind of get the gist, which is no mean feat. But if you're a fan from the past, it'll probably give you a bigger kick. Because I think we just hope we'd deliver a final blow, you know, for good old Nemesis. And of course, he's always slightly overshadowed. It's always in part of his history, but he's somewhat a little bit overshadowed by Torquemada, who's a very popular villain, and we always laugh our heads off. The more outrageous he is, I mean, the more we just laugh and laugh and laugh. Nemesis, relatively serious by comparison, though he does disgrace himself in the final episode, which I'm pleased about.
Well, what a lineup. Brian Bolland, Peter Milligan, Gordon Rennie, and Kev O'Neill. I hope that your appetite has been firmly whetted for Prog 2000. It'll be landing on subscribers' mats on Saturday and will officially go on sale a week today on the 28th of September. We hope you enjoy it. We've read it. It's absolutely fantastic. And what more can we say? Here's to 2000 more issues of 2000 AD. Thank you for listening to the Thrillcast. I've been your host, Molchar. Splundig Verthrig, Earthlitz. Now, are you reading the galaxy's greatest comic? 2000 AD is in orbit every Wednesday from all good news agents and comic book stores. 2080 is also available digitally. You can get PDF copies, which are DRM-free, from our website at www.2080online.com, or you can download the free 2080 app for Apple and Android devices. Now, you get that by searching for 2000 space AD in iTunes and the Google Play Store. There's also the Judge Dredd magazine, which is published in print and digital every month with more pages, more Dredd-centric stories, special features, and a bagged reprint magazine featuring forgotten 2080 classics. And don't forget that our graphic novels, including absolute timeless classics like Strontium Dog, Ace Trucking, Flesh, Judge Dredd, Slain, Robo Hunter, and many, many more, are also available digitally through our webshop and app. We're on social media with the latest announcements, competitions and freebies. Search on Facebook and Google Plus for 2000AD. If you're on Instagram, we're Insta2000AD, and you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at 2000AD. Make sure you stay Zarjaz, Earthlitz. Splundig Verthrig.